Many of us as human beings suffer from a case of mistaken identity. Have you ever seen one of these movies where someone forgets who they are? They have amnesia. The great reality of what every human being is, in other words, the identity that is the essence, the absolute essence, the only truly real reality of what every human being is awakened awareness. Awareness is the primary essence of our being. It's more fundamental than anything about us. There's nothing that we know, nothing that we perceive, nothing that we conceive, and even all the things that are not perceivable and conceivable are only because of awareness. And this awareness is not something that we need to achieve or attain. It's not confined or restricted in any way to any such kind of speculative maneuvers as achievement, effort, or attaining something. Because it always is, and it is totally without extremes, such as time or dimension or practice or development or fruition or some kind of destination one gets to where one finally realizes something about who one really is, because it has never had any of those extremes, there's nothing that can be said about what we are. So we could say we're indescribable. Indescribable awareness, vast as infinite space, vast as infinite space. And that vast expanse of infinite space that is without extreme, without limitation or restriction, is the true reality of what we are. Anything that appears within that space is a spectacular illusion of pure space and nothing else. So in the Great Freedom Teaching, we refer to anything that appears within the pure view of already accomplished awakened awareness. We call anything that appears within that pure view of awareness a point of view. So we don't have a lot of different names for it, a somebody and all their thoughts, feelings, emotions, and sensations, people, places, and things, illusions, circumstances. We don't have a lot of different terms we use. We use one term, point of view. Point of view includes all phenomena, no matter what it is. And this makes it easier for us to understand who we are. When we can simply just rest as the ease of this essence that is the only underlying basis of every point of view, then more and more we realize that all points of view, no matter what they are empty appearances with no underlying basis, foundation, or support other than awakened awareness. So every point of view, no matter what it is, it's never been anything other than awakened awareness. It would not be without awakened awareness. This awakened awareness that is already accomplished, already present, already completely directly accessible and available is our true nature, our fundamental nature. All of the points of view of the pure space of awareness are its dynamic energy and inseparable from it, just like the color of an aquamarine is inseparable from the aquamarine. There's no way we could ever separate out the color of an aquamarine and say, okay, here's the color, here's the aquamarine. So all these points of view are the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing else. And as they are all the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing else, to try to reconfigure them into pure space when they only are pure space, the basic space of awareness, to try to reconfigure all the points of view into some points of view that are enlightened points of view is hopeless. It's totally hopeless. It's a totally hopeless endeavor because there's nothing to do. There's nothing to do. When all points of view, no matter what they are equal and even, a vast expanse like infinite space, in which there's nothing other than pure space, to attempt to reconfigure pure space would be entirely futile. It's just like if we went into pure space and just tried to reconfigure it to make it into better pure space. We'd never be able to do that. So when we talk about resting naturally as the essence of each perception, as the full force and power of who we really are, we come to the definitive conclusion that all our points of view, no matter how we've described them, and most of us have learned to describe all the points of view as either positive, negative, or neutral. Everything that goes on, we have it categorized into some kind of a judgment, analysis, assumption about what it is. And when we've categorized everything into positive, negative, and neutral, we live in a world of extremes, a world of opposites, a world of mistaken identity, where we think we have to take all these things that we've labeled as positive, negative, and neutral, which are only pure space, and somehow reconfigure them so we can be aware basic space. So you see, the more we try to do that, the more frustration and suffering there is. To live as awareness is the end of frustration and suffering. To live as awareness is the end of frustration and suffering. And the end of frustration and suffering is to realize that all points of view are awareness, and all awareness is point of view. So there, point of view and awareness are inseparable. There would be no awareness without point of view. So there is no awakening, liberation, or enlightenment that's separate or apart from point of view. Now, for many, many people, this is very easy to understand. And it's particularly easy to understand that all the positive and neutral points of view are awareness. We can understand that they're good, or they're not bothersome. If they're neutral, they have no consequences. And if they're good, oh, they're good. We've decided they're good. Awareness is good. So my good points of view, I can see they are awareness. But when it comes to our negative points of view, things about us that we've always tried to change, that we've tried to whip into shape in one way or another, through all kinds of means and methods, practices, we've attempted to whip these into shape, whether self-help books or going to workshops and seminars or engaging in all kinds of practices and changes in life, something we're looking for to quell or to quash these negative points of view. But we could live for trillions of eons, and we would never be able to quash or quell what we label as negative, because the reality of what we already are, already accomplished awakened awareness, is that it has no extremes. So if we think there's an extreme that we need to get rid of, then we'll never, ever be able to come to a definitive conclusion about what we are. So when these very powerful, rough, wild, and intensely negative points of view come up, it is most important then to rest naturally and to know that nothing need be done about them. They do not need any antidotes. They are their own undoing, just like all points of view are. If we rest naturally with a point of view we've been trying to fix all our lives, some kind of negative point of view, and resting naturally, it means just being at ease. There's no particular way to rest. It's just, instead of elaborating a story when a point of view comes up, just stop. Come to a complete stop. Rather than going from point of view to point of view like a connect the dots drawing, just stop and don't go there. Just don't go there. Just rest as the essence of being, the underlying essence that is the only origin of every point of view. No point of view whatsoever has an independent origin, including negative points of view. So these negative points of view that usually appear as negative thoughts or afflictive emotional states, very afflictive emotional states, or as actions that we conduct that we really don't like about ourselves, when those come up, it's most important of all to rest, because these negative points of view, they are the utmost secret. These are the utmost secret to enlightenment. As long as we're trying to fix them or bend them into shape, applying antidotes, elaborating them into some kind of set or subset of all kinds of other good points of view, we're trying to take them out of the corral of the negative and force them into the corral of the positive, or maybe we're trying to obliterate them, annihilate them, exterminate them, expunge them, get rid of them forever. But no matter what we do, it'll be impossible to have that occur. It'll be absolutely impossible to have that occur unless we reach the definitive conclusion that all those points of view, including the negative of points of view, are awakened awareness and nothing else. So for many of us, we have learned that we have a personal identity. All these points of view, no matter what they are, they have a label of some kind, a word that describes them. And the words that describe everything are all the words in the dictionary. Any word you can find in the dictionary, online or Oxford Unabridged Dictionary or wherever you look, all those are points of view. And then all the words that aren't in the dictionary, they're points of view too. So we all know today, especially, there are lots of words that aren't in the dictionary yet. So all these words too are points of view. But if we believe in all these labels and we take them to be something, then it's really important for each of us to look into the underlying basis of that label. In other words, what is it to which that label applies? So when we look into that, then we can get a deeper understanding of the true nature of all labels or all points of view. And right now we'll look at a couple labels that are very prevalent for all of us, predominant. And one is the label of a personal identity. And then the other is the personal identity as it relates to all the other labels. So we could say the personal identity is a subject and all the other labels are objects, but really they're all just points of view. So when we look into that to which the label applies and we try to find its underlying basis, then we need to look at this personal identity that we take ourselves to be, the somebody that we take ourselves to be, and we need to ask ourselves, okay, if there is someone here, if there's actually someone here who is a personal identity, where did they come from? You know, in other words, where did they originate? Where is that personal identity dwelling now, and where will it cease? So that's what we have to look into. And when we look at that, we can say, okay, well, I was told I was born. And then we can say, well, what was born? You know, what was actually born? And then maybe we might say, Edmund was born. Edmund was born, and there's Edmund, and there's the personal identity of Edmund. He was born. And so now we'll look at Edmund and we'll try to find out exactly where Edmund is located. In other words, where Edmund is dwelling right here. But no matter where we look for Edmund, we can't find a specific location for Edmund in any element of Edmund's body, because Edmund is like a mirage, a magnificent, beautiful, vivid appearance that is distinct and clear of awakened awareness and nothing else. So if we look into Edmund and we look into the label of his name, for example, Edmund, we can take each one of the letters of the alphabet and look at that. Can we find Edmund there in the E or the D or the M or the U, is it? O or the O or the N or the D? Can we find Edmund in any of the letters of the alphabet that are Edmund's name? No, we really can't. No matter where we look in those letters of the alphabet, we're not going to find Edmund there. And if we took Edmund and we said, well, is Edmund in his ear? You know, is Edmund located in the ear? And we looked at each piece of the ear, the skin, the little hairs inside the ear, and on the outside, the wax in the ear, the cartilage in there, the bones underneath. No matter where we looked, we wouldn't find Edmundness. So we wouldn't be able to find the personal identity of Edmund. And if we looked even deeper, we looked into the brain. Lots of people think that our personal identity is located in the brain. But if we looked into the brain and we looked at all of the different parts of the brain, all of its different lobes and spheres, we could never come to any definitive conclusion about Edmund located anywhere in the brain. Even great scientists have attempted to do this, and no one has ever been able to definitively conclude, yes, this is where the eye is located. This is where consciousness is located. No results have been found. No results have been found that definitely prove that there is an eye located somewhere there. And so we could go through all the elements of this ephemeral, evanescent appearance of Edmund. And no matter where we look, the bones, the muscles, the organs, the blood, all of the cells, no matter how minute they may be, we still wouldn't find Edmundness anywhere. So we would find no location of a personal identity. And because we would find no personal location of an identity, we wouldn't be able to say that there was an identity born. It's just like saying a mirage which has never existed was born and dwells and ceases. Do you see what I'm saying about that? So even if we used advanced scientific means and we took Edmund and we brought in all the Edmund experts in the world, all the experts who knew all about I and consciousness and personal identity, and we brought in all of the physicists and with their electron microscope, a huge electron microscope, and we could put all of Edmund under this electron microscope. And then everyone looked at Edmund, all that would be seen would be minute electrons, all kinds of subatomic particles. That's all that would be seen. And even if we brought in Edmund's mother and father, they'd look through there and they wouldn't be able to say, oh yeah, that's our Edmund. That's Edmund. I can see those subatomic particles. They make up Edmund. They comprise Edmund. And then we could take Edmund and put him in a linear accelerator where he'd even be beyond subatomic particles. All he'd be would be light and sound. And again, you know, and then you might say, well, maybe it's the composite of all these things we've just looked at. Maybe that's what Edmund is. But once we look at Edmund vast as infinite space, there's no way to compose him into anything. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you see, when we look into ourselves as we really are, and we look into it just in a simple human way that's entirely reasonable, we can see that this assumption we've had about a personal identity who exists and then has all kinds of fearful consequences is an empty appearance. An empty appearance of aware basic space, but not an empty appearance like an inert void that is totally fatalistic and out of touch with everything. An emptiness of aware basic space that is naturally present. Naturally present. We can't deny that this aware basic space is naturally present as everything and all. And that natural presence is dynamically responsive. Dynamically responsive. Even though it is unchanging and unmoving, there is the spectacular illusion of movement everywhere, of dynamic energy. So if we try to describe our awareness as only one of these things, emptiness, natural presence, or responsiveness, then we don't have a total picture of what we are. You see, what we are is indescribable. How could we possibly describe that which has no underlying basis, exists only as aware basic space that is neither non-existent or existent, is obviously naturally present yet entirely empty of any origin other than awareness in that natural presence, and which is a magnificent display of dynamic energy? So see, if we try to adopt an extreme of description about what we are, it'll be impossible to know who we are. And when it comes to this personal identity, it's especially important to just allow ourselves to relax, even if we don't, even if there are people in this room who don't believe a word I'm saying, just why not check it out? Why not check it out? If you don't like it, then go back to living a personal identity with all kinds of points of view. It's fine, you know, it's not, awareness isn't a trap, like it gets you in a prison of awareness and then you can never do what you want to do. Awareness isn't like that. Awareness is the effusion of loving kindness. The effusion of loving kindness that only is self-knowing awareness as every human being. That's our personal identity. Self-knowing awareness, a personal identity. We don't have to make it into something either impersonal or personal. We just are who we are. We can never get away from it. And to be totally at ease is to realize that. All that means is that as one of these labels comes up, instead of elaborating a story out of it, as we may have been prone to do, we just come to a complete stop. Release our awareness into infinite space. That's it. That's it. And as we do so, we grow more and more familiar with this already present reality, this already accomplished reality of what we are. It's that simple. We can wait around for the Big Bang of enlightenment to happen, but that'll probably never happen, you know. It's very, very rare. But we can totally count on this direct approach of what we already are. Freedom and immediate perception, freedom as all labels. The only reason at all that that Edmund is aware of Edmund is awareness as Edmund. So you see, awareness is primary in every perception, no matter what it is. In the same way in which we looked into Edmund, we can look into any label, no matter what it is. If we're thinking maybe that this one label, this one negative point of view exists elsewhere other than awareness, then we can look into it in a very simple way. We can look into it in a simple way. We can ask, well, you know, that anger, what is its underlying basis, really? What is its underlying basis? What does that label anger relate to? What is the underlying basis for that description? Where did anger really come from? You know, we might even sit and try to drum up anger, contrive it. Think of something that really makes us mad. And just rest naturally, just be totally at ease, and then think of something that really makes us mad. See that anger come up. And when we do that, we'll see that anger, it appears in our awareness, and it vanishes naturally in and of itself without a trace. It only seems to be something if we make a story out of it. But if we feel that surge of anger come up in the body, and we're just totally at ease without getting into a story about what's going on with the anger. Oh, this one made me angry, or I'm angry because of that. It's just anger, just a point of view that's arising as the dynamic energy of awakened awareness. We see only our own vivid wakefulness. That's all that is, with no seer and seen. So there isn't awareness as a perceiver and anger as the perceived, there's only awareness as anger. And this can only become obvious to us through natural rest, through just being at ease as the essence of every point of view as it arises. When we see that so definitively, so clearly, our own vivid wakefulness that outshines that point of view of anger, then we see that that anger vanishes naturally as that awareness. It vanishes naturally as that awareness. And then the next point of view that comes, even if it is an elaboration on that anger, that it too appears in, of, as, and through that awareness and nothing else. So all these labels, no matter what they are, if we just simply rest, we be totally at ease as the essence of our being, we more and more come to the certainty that all of them, no matter what they are absolutely equal, that they're a single blissful expanse of equalness and evenness in which there's no separation whatsoever. This is the true meaning, the definitive conclusion of non-dual awareness. In the non-dual expanse that has never known division, there is no positive, negative, and neutral. Non-dual is non-dual in that there have never been two. There have never been two, so we're not trying to get two and make it into one. There have never been two.
I wasn't aware of the point of view until it's already been expressed and like a kind of a verbal attack on somebody who didn't deserve it and who's tired of hearing me say I'm sorry.
Oh.
But it came out and I saw it and I saw, wow, that's a point of view based on nothing that's really happening outside.
Yeah.
Manifestation. But I'd like to be able to catch it before I'm active, before it manifests in an action that's hurtful.
Well, this is a very powerful realization you've had, because in the past it may have been just automatic. And then you'd apply an antidote, like saying, I'm sorry, and then saying to yourself, I'm never going to do that again, or I'm going to try not to do that again. But now you've realized that it's a point of view, that it's just a point of view of awakened awareness, that you're not somebody who's in there trying to do something with it. And as you just come more and more into the ease of the essence of your being, this will just, in and of itself, come to a stop. It'll just come to a stop. There won't be the, perhaps first there'll just be the point of view arising, and then maybe the thought, the next point of view will be about an action that could occur, but the action will not occur. And then the more that you're at ease, the more all of that just resolves in the basic space of awareness, so that there is a perception of utter lucidity. No matter what the point of view is, it's inseparable as basic space. And in that sense, there are no points of view, because it's all aware basic space, just the utter lucidity of aware basic space. There's no way this has to come about, and there's no way that it does come about, but because it's already accomplished. For us as human beings, in this very simple, straightforward approach of knowing who we are, we become more and more familiar with what is already the case. And so as we become more and more familiar with what is already the case, it may seem like that's happening within a sequence of time and within space, but all the while what we are is timeless. It's never been confined by time and space. So for us, in a simple human way as human beings, it seems that we gradually familiarize ourselves with what we are. But just this realization you've had where you've seen that it is a point of view is very, very powerful. And you're participating in the 12 Inquiries teaching now. And the 12 Inquiries teaching is a way out of point of view. It's a way out of point of view, a way of cutting through the solidity of point of view. And the first realization within that is that all points of view are included and contained within awareness. So this is the realization you've had. And it's a very profound realization to realize that all these points of view are included and contained within awareness. It's a very powerful, it's the foundational realization about what you are.
I have an assumption, I guess, that the point of view precedes the action, but it seemed like I wasn't aware of the point of view until in hindsight that an action took place. Is there a point of view and then a manifestation of it through action, or is the action just
the action,
evidence of point of view?
The action's just another point of view. That's all it is. It's all the dynamic energy of awareness. The more you come into the ease of your natural being, of the natural awareness that is naturally free, naturally occurring, and timelessly perfect and complete, the more this will just be obvious that all the points of view are included within awareness. And the more there will be awareness as each of the points of view with no separation whatsoever. You don't have to do anything. Just keep showing up. Really, keep showing up, and it'll just become more and more obvious to you that you are who you are. You don't have to figure out anything. As I said the other day, figure it out is not a mantra. It is not a mantra. There's nothing to intellectually speculate about or to bring into representation in any way. Just allow the own ease of your being to become more and more obvious. It's very, very simple. It's already so evident in you, you know. It's so evident in you. It just can't be missed. And sometimes others can see it before we can see it ourselves. Just a moment. Sorry. Something more about that, Madeline?
It's interesting you say others can see it before, because I feel that the behavior the points of view enacting is like misbehaving. Otherwise, then it's like, oh, well, you know, you've been going to teachings for how long, and it's not being demonstrated in your behavior.
Uh-huh.
And I see that too. Like when, you
know. Well, you see, uh-huh. When are you going to be a good person? Is that what you said? Well, first of all, you already are a good person. So you see, each one of us, we have our own points of view. And these points of view just are whatever they are for each of us. And within those points of view, we've labeled some of them as really negative. And we believe that those that are really negative are evidence that we're not already awake. These are evidence that we're not already awake. We're continuing to act on impulse, or we have thoughts we don't want anyone to know about, or emotional states we don't want anyone to know about. And we're absolutely sure that these are evidence that we're not awake. Or we have bodily sensations we don't want anyone to know about. And we're sure that this is absolutely the sign, evidence, and demonstration that we're not awake and we never could be. So you see, these are negative points of view. When they come up, they're afflictive states. When they come up, they're our best friend, really. It's the utmost secret of enlightenment. When we rest naturally as these afflictive states, these things that we've taken to be afflictive, that we've taken to be other than awakened awareness, that we've thought make us bad or unable to be redeemed, and all of these other things that we think about ourselves, it's more important than anything to rest naturally when those arise. Because you see, when we say that awakened awareness, which is the only reality of what we are, is a vast, indivisible expanse that is non-dual and beneficial in nature, it means just that, that everything within it is a non-dual expanse that is beneficial in nature, even the negative actions and emotional states. But we will never know that unless we realize the complete ease that is the underlying basis of each one of these. If we realize it about just one of our deeply afflictive states, our deeply afflictive points of view, then we realize it about many of them. So it's especially important when, for those of you in the room who have a tendency to beat yourself up, I'm not awake, I could never be awake, because this point of view is evidence that I'm not awake. That's what many people say. This is the evidence I'm not awake and I never can be. I'm doing this thing, that thing, or the other thing. Well, all great beings, whoever they are, who have ever awakened, have had to confront, if it's been an authentic realization of completely perfect enlightenment, every single one has had, like the Buddha, for example, had to see that all the points of view, no matter what they are Buddha nature. That's what he called it. So, you know, he was sitting under the Bodhi tree, a simple human being, just like anyone in this room, flesh and blood, and just like everyone else. And this was his entire message, you know, everyone is Buddha. I'm no different than anyone else. This was his entire message. He sat there under the tree and he was absolutely determined to realize what he felt was missing in all the teachings he had gone to. And he had done all kinds of things, ascetic practices where he nearly killed himself, you know, through all kinds of tortuous practices he engaged in, and then he knew that wasn't it, so he just gave up. He gave up all the practices, and he just sat there. And he said, okay, I'm going to sit here until I'm enlightened. I'm just going to sit here until I know I'm enlightened, until I've found what's missing, until I've found that which will end suffering. He was just determined to sit there. And as he sat there then, we don't really know for how long, there are many stories about that, all these points of view came up, everything, all of the negative points of view that he'd been trying to push away with all his different practices, that's what visited him. So, you know, in the story of the Buddha, that's called Mara, or illusion, that it was the, and it's written about allegorically as a demon who came and visited him, Mara, and made him have all these illusory states of lusting, dancing maidens, and he felt his lust too, and he could have anyone he wanted to have, or, you know, all the feasts that ever were, he could eat all those and more. All the money and jewels that ever were, he could have all those and more. So all of these things, greed, anger, pride, lust, envy, gluttony, sloth, this is what visited him. But these were all points of view, you see. We could call them gods or demons or whatever, but we, for simplicity's sake, so every human being on earth can understand it, we just call them points of view. And he just sat there, so he didn't try to apply any antidotes to any of them. He just sat there, and all of these things, one after another, just a tremendous avalanche of them. For a very long time he sat there while all this was going on. And as he did so, he realized that form is emptiness and emptiness is form. All these images, no matter what they were, all of them, no matter what they were, all of these things that he had thought needed to be corrected about himself, he came to the definitive conclusion that they were nothing but a single expanse of Buddha nature. What we call awakened awareness, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. And in that realization, he realized the utmost, completely perfect enlightenment. And you know, he touched the earth as his witness, to bear witness to what he had realized, that, you know, he wasn't transcending the body, getting away from the body. He touched the earth. All of the earth and everyone on it, everything on it, is Buddha nature. It is awakened awareness, including all of the afflictive emotional states, no matter what they are. And in this, you know, he found the end of suffering. That's what he'd been looking for. His real awakening was his awakening of enlightened intent. You know, that was his fundamental awakening. When he still lived in the palace, he came to the conclusion, because he'd wandered outside the gates of the palace and seen all the suffering, he came to the conclusion that he was going to find an end to suffering and nothing would stop him. So this was the awakening of enlightened intent. And every single point of view is enlightened intent. So once that is realized, and we come face to face with how much our own points of view have caused us suffering, then that gives us the motivation to rest. We see that we're the source of our own suffering. That's it. We're the source of our own suffering. This reality of awareness, it's the heart essence of every point of view. It's the heartbeat of every point of view. So if there's any point of view we're trying to push away, with that we most especially have to find the ease that is its essence. It's extremely powerful to realize this about ourselves.
Talking earlier about anger and talking about choosing something you felt really angry about and observing the points of view and trying to rest in them. Would you suggest that as a way to actually, as a kind of practice, to choose one of your deep afflictions and which challenge you, which raise points of view that challenge you, and then to put yourself into those situations or experiences and try to rest? Or is that a dangerous approach?
I wouldn't recommend it as an ongoing practice. I'd recommend it once, just to become familiar with the reality of what's going on, you know, that everything really is included and contained within awareness. And as I say every single day, anyone who keeps coming back for the great freedom teachings that are offered, there are people who come who they don't know how to rest, they can't do it, it doesn't mean anything to them, rest naturally, so they don't know what the ease of being is, and it doesn't matter. If you just keep coming back here, conviction will dawn if you keep showing up for the teachings. You see, we already are who we are. Awareness is entirely compassionate awareness. So awareness isn't trying to play a game of hide and seek with us. You know, like, oh, she's coming at me, I'm going to hide under the table. Now I'm going to get under the table so she'll never find me. You know, awareness isn't playing hide and seek. Awareness is just right here, like the consummate lover. The consummate lover, our own awareness. So you see, no one's hiding. And there's nothing to hide from.
It feels like awareness is hiding from us.
That's only because we persist in our concepts. That's it. That's the only reason whatsoever. There is absolutely no way to realize who we are if we're going to persist in point of view. And we have that choice with every single point of view. We have a choice to either jump into the point of view and make a big story out of it, whether there's spiritual or non-spiritual points of view, or we have an opportunity to be timelessly free as the great reality of what we already are. But for some who need concepts, then, and want to live a life based on that, then that may be the way one wants to persist. But there are more and more people who just don't want to do that, you know. The concepts are exhausted. It's they're exhausted. It's like spending your entire life inside a dictionary, jumping from one word to the other. Oh, this doesn't feel good, I'm going to jump over there. That doesn't feel good, I'm going to jump over there. I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't recommend it. But, you know, too, we need to, if we really, really want all of the concepts to come to an end and resolve in the basic space they're already resolved in, then it's really important for us to, in a very simple, straightforward way, just be that ease that is awareness inclusive of all points of view. Even if we don't come to the full resolution of all points of view resolved forever as aware basic space in our lifetime, just the realization that all points of view are included and contained within awareness is so immensely powerful and such a huge relief and an end to so much suffering that if that's all we want to come to a conclusion about, that's great. But you know, it's very easy to take it all the way. It's very, very easy to take it all the way.
What does all points of view resolved in our lifetime mean? Does that mean, I don't know what that means.
It means the perception of utter lucidity without reification. It means everything is as it is, but there's no need to describe any of it.
That's what I wanted to ask.
Can I finish here, please?
And that's different to the second thing you mentioned, which was just recognizing points of view as awareness.
You mean all points of view included and contained within awareness? That's the initial realization. First, we have to have that realization. As we grow more and more familiar with it, all the points of view naturally resolve in basic space without ever trying to figure any of it out.
The step beyond that is realizing the lucidity of the points of view.
Oh, every single moment is a new realization. But awakened awareness is the basis of all those. I can sit here and describe it, or you can live it. What would you like to do?
I want to live it.
Great. We have an agreement then. Well, you already are living it, so just be more and more familiar with the reality you already are. You see, a person who has amnesia, they still are who they are, even though they have forgotten who they are. Vivian?
Yeah, I should like to hear more about this reification and also about responsiveness.
Well, responsiveness, I'll address responsiveness first. Responsiveness is the inherent natural rest of every point of view. So that's the ultimate responsiveness of awakened awareness. That as the essence of its dynamic energy is nothing but natural rest. So there's nothing there other than natural rest. Reification is forgetting that that is the case. Reification is describing everything that occurs and making it into something. So rather than just allowing the natural rest of the great reality to be the ease of one's being to describe whatever's going on and take it to be something. Now, a simple example of this for us as human beings is the way we relate to each other. Usually the way we relate to each other is that we have our points of view and then we've decided that the other people that we know have their points of view too. And what we've decided about the other people is that all the points of view they've ever had in relation to our points of view, that that's what they are. So then every time we see a person, what we really see are all their points of view. We don't see the natural ease of our being nor the natural ease of theirs. So we have no connection. We have no real connection because all we see are all these points of view. And so when we're resting naturally as the ease of our own being, when we see someone, no matter how long we've known them, they're just so fresh and new, you know, with nothing going on. We haven't hauled in a whole bunch of points of view from a past that identify them as who they are. There's just the complete ease of natural being that is awareness right here. And there's no thought about what we're going to get out of the relationship in the future or how this meeting is going to turn out or anything else. There's just complete ease and no stranger anywhere. Because everything is that ease of being and nothing else. So you see, we either recognize our awareness or we don't recognize it. Just those two. It's so simple. And the only way we don't recognize our awareness is if we forget about it and start thinking or reifying, you know, describing all the points of view and making them into something. This is all very specifically and beautifully described in the 12 Inquiries teaching. It's very specifically described there, but sometimes it just seems like it can't be so simple. Like one man, when he first came, he said, "Oh, this is so easy, it's like cheating." It's so easy, it's like cheating. But wouldn't it make sense that what we are, what we already are, would be easy? What we already are would be easy, and it wouldn't be hiding. You know, it's never been hidden. Do you have something more about that, TV?
Yeah, it's still not clear to me about responsiveness. Even though I didn't catch what you said about the idea of responsiveness.
Oh.
I'm asking because you said you called it one of the three
natural expressions of awareness. The three inseparable natural expressions. So what the responsiveness is the natural ease of every point of view that is its true essence and basic space. So every point of view, no matter what it is full to overflowing boundlessly with natural ease, the natural ease of our own being. So when we rest naturally, then we realize that ease that is the responsiveness of every single point of view. And in that ease, we also realize that its natural presence, whatever we may describe it as, is non-threatening. It's non-threatening. It's a naturally present ease of being. And that naturally present ease of being is nothing but aware basic space.
If I understand your so-called lingo, because it's new to me. I'm here today for the first day. So I want to see if I'm getting what you're saying. If I'm with a friend and a button gets pushed, and
yes,
I have a choice to react, get angry or whatever, or defensive. But in the way, and sometimes I do that, but if I am in my higher self at that moment, then I will just kind of quickly close my eyes and watch my breath and just feel the essence of myself and my friend. And in that moment, everything dissipates.
Mm-hmm.
And is that what you're saying? In that moment, I'm in touch with something so quiet and silent that what had happened kind of just naturally dissipates. It loses its power, and then I can just be with my friend again, and we're I don't know I'm trying to find a word. I'm sorry. There's peace and harmony at that moment. So I'm wondering, is this in a way what you're saying? Is there a similarity here, or it's two different things?
Well, there is a distinction in the languaging. The languaging that is used in the Great Freedom Teaching is very specific and precise, in that awakened awareness, which is what we are, it doesn't have any extremes. So it doesn't have a higher self and a lower self. It's just awakened awareness with its own inseparable energy. Dynamic energy of point of view, just like the color blue is inseparable from the sky. So when the button gets pushed, rather than trying to do anything, like watch the breath or anything like that, just to allow the ease of the essence of that point of view, which is awareness only, to be the case.
So how do you actually do that? Like, my technique would be to watch the breath.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to do at that particular moment, just when you say rest easily? What are you going to do?
Just rest as the awareness that is the essence of that point of view. So just as the essence. What you're calling the higher self, that's synonymous with awareness. But the button that's been pushed is an inseparable from that. You see, the higher self, as you call it, what we call awakened awareness, is the essence of that point of view. We don't use the word higher self because higher self seems like an entity,
right,
that
right.
is a destination.
Right.
Whereas every human being on earth, we all know we're aware. There's no one who can say, I'm not aware. And our awareness is the root of every single point of view. So our awareness of our being naturally present, awareness is primary in that. Awareness is primary in every single point of view. Awareness of a button being pushed, it's awareness as that button being pushed. It's not awareness over here and the button being pushed. It's awareness as that button being pushed. So we just are aware, the vivid wakefulness that is the essence, the only essence of that point of view, whatever it is. We just rest as that, without describing anything, without seeking anything.
So that's what I would like to understand. As mm-hmm. I said, I would just watch my breath. So what are you actually doing? You're doing nothing? That's what I want to understand.
Doing nothing, that's right.
So,
just resting is the awareness that is the essence of that perception. And that essentially means there's awareness alone without any need or effort to describe what's going on. So the button gets pushed. But instead, give us the juicy details. What kind of buttons get pushed in you?
when you put me on the spot like that, like nothing.
You can't think of one.
Do something and I'll show you.
But, Would anyone like to name a button they get pushed to help us out? Button.
Keep coming back. But the tailor also says, keep coming back. And I walk from here over to Ram Jula to pick up clothes that are never ready. So that's a button that pushes every time.
Oh, uh-huh. When I say keep coming back.
To collect clothes that are supposed to be ready, they're never.
Oh, from the tailor. Okay.
So that's
uh-huh. So the clothes aren't ready, and you feel that.
Yeah, keep coming back. Just keep coming back.
The tailor wants you to keep coming back through.
Go back and back and back in the heat. Somebody never does what they say they'll do. That's my plan.
Okay, that's a good example. So at that point, you could just say, well, that's India, and surrender to it and stay in the nothingness of it all. Or you can really get angry and say, oh, that's no. So, okay, so if I choose to just... Is it okay if I speak? Because then she started speaking. Who do you want to work with?
Oh, no. It's everyone. This is for everyone,
so
not just one person.
Uh-huh.
We're all in this together, so you can each say whatever you want to say. That's fine. We got the tailor over here. The tailor who doesn't keep the promises. Okay.
So, now, so just to understand how you would heal this or use it. So now we have that moment where we can get angry, but we choose not to. So we, as I said, I would just watch my breath and just go into a quiet place. But I want to understand what you do. So you do nothing at that moment?
Well, I do nothing at all, ever. So, so but what I would suggest is that, say, the tailor, you go back to the tailor for, how many times have you been to this tailor?
Seven
times. Okay. Well, first of all, the same tailor for 10 years? Okay. First of all, we'll talk about resting when your buttons get pushed, and then I'll give you a little practical advice, okay? You see, awareness is extremely practical. And awareness is a highly qualified business. Awareness. So awareness doesn't eschew anything and say, oh, this isn't awareness, good business, that's not awareness. Awareness doesn't eschew anything. In other words, set it aside and say, oh, this isn't awareness. So anyway, when the button gets pushed, you know, well, we've had this ongoing dialogue with the hotel staff here. They, at 4:30 in the morning, they come and take a shower in the room next to mine, and it uses my water heater, and then I wake up. So it works. And this is all fine and good. I mean, but we have asked them to not do that. But you know, sometimes these things happen and people make a commitment and then they don't keep their commitment. So then your button gets pushed, the tailor, for 10 years, for the who knows how many times this has happened. And each time there's the same reaction. Well, when that reaction comes up, to just stop. Come to a complete stop and rest naturally. In other words, don't apply an antidote. Rest naturally is the spaciousness that is the entire basic reality of that button pushing, dynamic energy of awareness. That's all that's going on. But you see, if there's an antidote applied to that button being pushed, like, oh, I shouldn't have this feeling, that might be the antidote. Or, oh, he's poor. Or she's poor, and I want to keep giving them my business so they all have money to eat. Or, you know, there can be all kinds of antidotes, elaborations that are built on this. But when we rest naturally, we can't, just as the awareness is the essence of that point of view. There'd be no point of view without the awareness that is it. There would be no point of view. So why not get right to the core of the matter instead of putting an antidote in the way, which is just another point of view, like watching the breath or a higher self or whatever. So when there's just rest as the awareness that is the essence of that point of view, then you've reached the heart of the matter. You've reached the heart of the matter for all points of view. And in that dazzling reality of pervasive basic space you know what to do and how to act. You just know what to do and how to act. And it's practical. You know, it's totally practical.
You might suggest it sometime to just take your clothes and go somewhere else.
Exactly, uh-huh. Or it might...
It, to rest for a whole year every time one goes.
Yes, well... Well,
that's what I'd like to know.
Oh, sure.
I missed it yesterday, and it was all right. I mean, I didn't speak out the way I used to in the past. But, I mean, how many times would one go?
How many times would one go? Well, as I said, awareness is very practical. And awareness is also very compassionate. So awareness, it might be that maybe a couple times you'd do that, but if you went then a third time and it was the same story, well, awareness would be finding a new tailor.
The new tailor also will be like him only, the previous one.
Pardon?
The new tailor also will be the, like the old one only.
We'll see. Well, when we rest naturally, there are all kinds of wondrous things that happen. You know, when we no longer have amnesia, we no longer have amnesia. You know, it's gone. We look in the mirror and say, aha, it's me. It's me as I really am. We no longer have amnesia, and we can't be put back into a state of amnesia by any of our points of view. So these points of view that really afflict us, they're good. They're good to rest as.
What happened with your shower and the noise at 4:30?
Well, this again occurred last night, so we're having another conversation with them. Uh-huh. Yeah. It just is whatever it is. But when people promise me something, I hold account for the promise.
That's my problem.
There's a lot of talk these days about enlightenment. Oh, it means not making any commitments. There's no doer, so who is there to make a commitment? Or, you know, there aren't any commitments, so why make a commitment? Oh, this is just nonsense. It's just a total bunch of nonsense. Really, believe me, it's just complete nonsense. Pardon?
That's where it gets difficult, you know, how to move with both things, you know, to keep commitments and have, but not expect maybe others to commit to keep them, I don't know.
Well, when you rest as awareness, more and more that immense power and force of loving kindness and compassion is all that's evident, not only for yourself, but for everyone else. But you see, we need to come to complete rest with all of our own points of view in order to realize the warmth of compassion that is the great reality of what we are. As we rest naturally and easily as the essence of all of our own points of view, we don't have to do anything to get compassion. We find it's inherent. We just feel a warmth that floods our body, our entire being, the warmth of compassion and wisdom and love and bliss. And it's total self-care, if you want to call it that. The best way to take care of yourself. And when you're taking care of yourself, then you're taking care of yourself. And that way you can enter into relationship with others in a totally complete way, because in understanding yourself so completely, you understand everything and all as yourself. No matter what it is, as yourself, you know that just as you've suffered so tremendously from point of view, that everyone suffers from point of view.
But you still make a decision in circumstances like these, or speak a little bit.
You know, you just know whether to speak or not, or... We definitely speak up. If we have something here at the hotel that we would like to see change, then we speak up. We speak up about the conditions of hygiene in the kitchen. We speak up about exactly how we want our rooms taken care of, exactly how we want our clothes washed, you know, what we'd like to see occur here in terms of the noise level in the middle of the night. So we're very clear about that. And if promises are kept and then are made and then they're not kept, then we have another conversation. And if this would be ongoing, then we would find another location. You know, so this is just the way it is. Awareness is very practical.
Mm-hmm. What is the difference between how you speak up versus how maybe some people who haven't stepped into this awareness would speak up? Because I assume that all of the things you just mentioned, the practical aspects of your existence here in the hotel, could be labeled points of view. And yet, and they exist as all things do in awareness, if I'm understanding.
As awareness.
As awareness. Uh-huh. And you're speaking up. Uh-huh. So you are interacting with those points of view in a present way. And yet, there must be something, is it not getting attached to them, that makes your speaking up about them different than somebody else who's just going and existing in the world in a less aware way? What is the magic in what you're saying?
There's no reaction.
There's no emotional reaction. There's action, but not reaction.
There's no reaction. I didn't say there's no emotion, I said there's no reaction. Awareness is point of view, so as long as we have a point of view and we then have another point of view that someone is responsible for the point of view we just had, then there's just a mess. There's just a big mess of confusion. But when we rest as awareness, then it's very clear that all points of view, no matter what they are, the dynamic energy of awareness. And there's no one reacting to anything. There's just a flow of wise action, whatever it is.
That emotion exists.
There are all these things that are described as emotion, but they're all awareness only. You know, like someone dies, there's grief. It's awareness only. It isn't something like the ogre or demon grief that's trying to get me or that's taken over my energy field. It isn't like that anymore. So that's what reification is. If we take something to be its label only and we spend our entire life inside a dictionary just floating from one label to the other, taking each label to be something and have meaning and having some kind of description about who we are and how we're doing things. But you see, once we realize that every single word in the dictionary has as its ultimate meaning awareness, and we're resting as that awareness which is primary in each point of view and as each point of view is the pervasive basic space of all points of view, then there isn't reaction based on a personal identity that is somehow being confronted by something going on outside itself. It naturally becomes apparent that this is who we are. It just naturally becomes apparent. We already are it, so we don't have to do anything to get it. And as it becomes more apparent, we find in our way of being a much greater ease, no matter what situation we're in. So we're in all situations as that situation and without impediment. There's no impeding force or characteristic or quality of any kind in any situation.
And so when somebody does hold up their end of a commitment to you, do you feel something?
To relate to myself as a somebody who feels something, that is so removed from me. That is just so totally removed. It's just, I can't even relate to when I lived like that. You know, I know that I, at one time, I did like live like that. I'm a personal somebody. I've got all these emotional states and thoughts. These are who I am. And that led me to the brink of total despair. And I'm glad it did. And I'm glad it was a long time ago that I reached that point. Because, you know, I could never find any solace whatsoever in my thoughts, my emotional states, and my reactions, and taking myself to be some kind of a figure who had all those things. And so, you know, I came to the conclusion that all of those things, no matter what they were, have an underlying basis that is total relief. And that it's entirely up to me to be that relief or to be all the disbelief of unrelief that is the essence of living a life based on point of view. So I can't, you see, I can't really respond to that question in the way that it's asked, because I don't take myself to be somebody who's comprised of a bunch of emotional states and thoughts. For me, all there is awakened awareness, a perception of complete lucidity that doesn't describe anything. And that's just the essence of everything, you know, the great movie of everything that is. It's the essence. There's nothing separate. There's nothing separate in any way. So you see, there's no way for me to describe that in relation to a supposed personal identity that has all kinds of things going on in it. The personal identity, the thoughts, the emotions, the sensations, the people, places, and things that the personal identity sees as other, all these are only points of view in awakened awareness. So the true identity is awareness, just awareness. And all we need to do is rest as that awareness. And it everything I'm saying becomes more and more obvious. But unless we make that sublime choice to rest, then we can't possibly taste the reality of what we are. We'll continue to try to figure everything out, how to find solutions to points of view, how to find antidotes to points of view, how to make the whole world a point of view better. To see every point of view as a cause or an effect of some other point of view. So we'll live our entire life like that. But awareness is beyond that whole realm of cause and effect, but it includes it. When we rest as awareness, we find that reality of our being that's never been imposed upon by anything. There's no imposition anywhere. There's just the vastness, the infinite reality of what we are and nothing else. Just pure space, but even that's saying too much. Most of all, it's just the great reality that there's nothing going on. That we've been spending all of our time trying to create some idea about what's going on when there's nothing going on. So you see, what point of view does is it is constantly making nothing into something and something into nothing. It's like a magic show, an illusory display. Everyone's a great magician, making something into nothing and nothing into something.
I've been pondering the same idea of commitment and speaking from awareness versus speaking as my points of view. And commitment's really important to me. And I'm going to use an example that's not a real thing, but it's a good example, I think. You know how when you enter into a commitment with a phone company, and they'll say, well, you know, there's a certain amount of months that you need to commit to, otherwise you're going to be fined. And so I say, okay, in order for me to make this commitment, I need to know exactly what I'm committing to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they say, well, we think it's going to be 12 months, but it might be 13.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to commit now. And I say, well, I really want to commit, but you need to tell me if it's 12 or if it's 13.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, okay, well, we can only tell you 12 for now. So I commit to 12. And then let's say 8 months into it, they say, oh, sorry, it's going to be 13. I feel moved to say, well, I can consider 13, but I have this other phone company I'm going to go explore for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to hold my commitment, and maybe I'm going to even go to 12 and a half, but I can't go to 13. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be me speaking as awareness. This is what I was committing to. I wanted to make that commitment. I made it wholeheartedly. But where I start elaborating mm-hmm. is I get into a story, well, you know, I really should hold the commitment because in the beginning they weren't sure, and I'm a bad person if I don't hold this commitment. But they're bad because they weren't able to communicate effectively up front what my commitment was, and I made this commitment as 12. I get into this elaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start going off into points of view about authority and da 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 da. And it just, mm-hmm. you know, spins into all of that. Mm-hmm. So where I'm having trouble is in the responsiveness part, in the action part, in the doing part, because I feel like commitment, because it's important to me, and because I know it's important to other people who make commitments with me, and I feel that I want to be able to say, like, look, just to be clear in communication, this is what happens, to not leave something hanging like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to do that? Is it okay to say, like, because instead I'm doing nothing. I'm just resting. And then I start elaborating, and I rest, and I go back to non-elaborating, and then I just, do you see what I'm saying? Like, at what point is it okay? At what point, I feel like I don't have an entitlement for some reason somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Like, I should just be resting instead of taking wise action, because I'm not sure if wise action is wise action or if it's some new elaboration.
Well, yeah. For each of us, we have our own points of view, and we know what those are. You have participated in the 12 Inquiries teaching, so you're very clear. You're no longer vague on what your principal points of view are. You see them totally clearly. You know what your habitual patterns of point of view are and how you spin out into certain points of view. So you know this about yourself. For in the beginning of resting naturally, it's more important than anything just to rest and forget about all the elaborations, whatever they are, even wise action or whatever it is. Just get familiar with rest. Don't put so much of a focus on commitments, actions, authority, you know, all these other elaborations that come about. So now for you, you've already integrated many points of view as awareness. So that's already occurred for you. That's been very easy for you. But you have these points of view that have been very afflictive in your life, ongoingly afflictive. And so with these right now, it's very, very important for you to rest and to rely on the ease of the four comforts, the teacher, the teaching, the community, and awareness. It's extremely important for you to really rely on those just to come to total ease, so that elaboration, rather than spinning out each time, it just gets more and more easeful, more and more effortless, and until there's only that ease and nothing else. And then you'll have the spaciousness to flow freely with whatever's occurring.
So maybe just keep resting until that flow naturally occurs and there's not a question of it occurring or not occurring.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And, you know, some of these... Sometimes we have points of view like commitment or authority or whatever they are that are principal points of view that really get us stirred up. And so when it comes to those points of view, we've labeled something as commitment or authority. Then it's good for us to just rest with that and to really look into the meaning of those words, commitment and authority, that we've been using to elaborate points of view. You know, like, what is our ultimate commitment to ask that? And what is our ultimate authority? What does that really mean? Rather than getting lost in everybody else's ideas of commitment and authority. You see, there's a flow of commitment and authority that is the direct expression of the exalted body, speech, and mind of awareness that can never be known from ordinary body, speech, and mind. And that's a level of commitment and authority that's unparalleled by anything that occurs within the realm of cause and effect. So this is what you want to familiarize yourself with, that these negative points of view, the afflictive states, they're the lions at the gate. These are the lions at the gate. Mark my words, they are the lions at the gate of enlightenment, the enlightenment that's already present. You know, when you walk up to those lions, you have a choice. You can either hightail it the other way and go back to point of view land, or go through the door and say, "Nice little lions, you know, here's some kibble for you."
Well, that's interesting, because I hear what you're saying 100%, and there's a trust thing in there too, because I'm still, like Melanie was saying, you know, a little bit of my history was to bark.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm also not trusting, like, yet, what is barking from a place of point of view, and what is just naturally saying, "Hey, I need to sleep. Don't turn the water on at 4:30." Like, mm-hmm. You know, there's a subtlety in that for me, mm-hmm. that I'm not trusting yet.
Uh-huh.
Where are my real voices in there?
Uh-huh.
Where are my non-me speaking from? And so I hear what you're saying. Just rest,
mm-hmm.
and then that will become more.
Exactly. And this is crucial. It is critical for you, Carrie. Absolutely crucial, critical. I want to be very clear about that. It's very important. Remember what I've said to you about the lions at the gate. We'll sit quietly for a moment.